New worlds, new ideas, and new people. Years of entertaining conversation, stimulating information. Join the Celebration 25 with
Bill Jenkins.
It's a Saturday night in Los Angeles, and welcome aboard. I'm Bill Jenkins. This is Open Mind, and we certainly want you to have one tonight. We want to stretch your open mind. And I'm sitting here looking at a bunch of photographs that are stretching mine. So come on in. Let's get it stretched together on this Saturday night. My guest is a man who has certainly established himself as an author, a researcher. It's created a lot of disturbance here, yon, and everywhere, considering the material he works with, the Philadelphia Experience, the Experiment. Helped write that incredible book, which is still having a little shockwaves that go here and yonder as we begin to understand more about that science. The Roswell incident, the story of the crash of a flying saucer back in 1948 near Roswell Air Force Base in New Mexico, Mr. Bill Moore. Bill, welcome to Open Mind.
Bill, it's a pleasure to be back.
All of these photographs. Too bad this isn't television. This is
Isn't this color radio?
No, this is color radio. That goes back many, many, many years. But we're looking at some brand new pictures of some old friends, the UFOs. The UFOs are still with us, are they not?
They are very much still with us, yes, they are.
What's happening new and exciting in the world of the UFO?
Well, something new, something old, something borrowed, something blue, as in book. You'll excuse the pun. Lots of things happening, but we're going to tease a little bit here. We have an exclusive, first time broadcast anywhere on the air, a very significant new development in the field.
In the field of UFOs?
In the field of UFOs.
Something new has happened.
There has been the release of, let's put it this way. The federal government has always maintained that all of their files on UFOs are on deposit in the federal or in the National Archives in Washington, D.C., in connection with the old Project Blue Book files. Bill, that just isn't so.
Is that 1717 H Street?
No, I don't think it is, actually. I think it's on Independence Avenue. But they have also never released in the U.S. any document pertaining to UFOs classified higher than secret, with the exception of the National Security Agency memorandum to the court, which is sort of a peripheral document. It doesn't deal directly with UFOs, that was released back in 1982, and that was 80% censored.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we now have a top secret document.
It was not
part of Project Blue Book. And it has not been censored, and it has just been released.
And we will go into that in detail.
We will go into it in detail later.
We'll do it later. We'll do it right after the 11 o'clock hour. And the reason I want to do that after the 11 o'clock hour is not to play the old game to tease you and stay with me for the next couple of hours. This show is unique in that it is during that hour that we have our largest audience, and I wanted to share this information with you with the largest number of people. Although I'm sitting on pins and needles to find out what it is, because you told me you weren't going to tell me until...
No, you know absolutely nothing about this. It's going to be a surprise to you, too.
Okay. So our subject is flying saucers. Is there a new book coming from your prolific pen of any kind that you know about?
There will be a new book, I hope, before the year is out.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, possibly two of them.
Have you seen any great new levels of information coming in? More sightings? Are we in or out of a flap? Or is the flap coming from Washington, where they seem to be recanting just a little bit?
Well, the Washington flaps all the time, you know, mm-hmm. and the feathers fly over there, and the fur flies occasionally. There have been more sightings of late. And the last several years, you know, we've been in the pits. But this past year, actually since last fall, things have picked up a bit. And I don't know whether we're in the beginning of a flap or not, but I certainly hope so. It's about time something happened.
Where is this occurring? Is it in the United States?
Oh, yeah. in the U.S.
Southern California?
There have been a few sightings in Southern California. There have been quite a number that I'm aware of significant sightings in New Mexico.
Mm.
Again, it's almost shades of the 40s. It's where it all began.
What is it about New Mexico they seem to love? You know, that's kind of a desolate place.
I don't know.
Except for the missile testing facility in Armageddon.
Well, there's all kinds of things going on over there. You know, if you take a look at the activity, both the military and military research-wise, mm-hmm. in New Mexico, it's a hotbed of activity right now. Kirtland Air Force Base, for example, is host to no less than, believe this or not, but it's true, 168 independent agencies are operating projects out of Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque.
What kind of agencies?
All kinds of agencies, from the Sandia Research Lab to a variety of Air Force activities to even Navy projects over there involving high-energy lasers to space applications of all kinds, and considerable, at the risk of ruffling a feather or two here, I'm going to say this anyway, considerable administrative activity which has its action arm in the test areas of the Nevada test site,
mm-hmm.
In connection with all kinds of classified defense and aircraft work over there. But the headquarters is at Kirtland for a lot of those projects. Then, of course, there's White Sands and Holloman Air Force Base, and there's Clovis and the air base over there. And
that is where the first atomic bomb was fired.
At outside of Alamogordo, that's right, mm-hmm. at Trinity site.
So there's really a lot of interesting thing that goes on in New Mexico outside of its geography.
That's true. And then again, there's Los Alamos, which is a very active and ongoing uh-huh. scientific community up there with all sorts of classified things going on there as well.
So there's a lot of reason that someone might be remotely interested in what we're doing.
Well, let's put it this way. If I were an alien and I were visiting planet Earth, I would certainly want to know what sort of rocks, spears, and arrows the aliens had, or the locals had, excuse me, that they might want to throw at me. And the way to find that out is to monitor the places where the locals are building those things.
If I were an alien visiting the planet Earth, I would have made sure I got hazardous duty pay before I came.
Or after you get back.
After you get back, if you made it back. I mean, if the people didn't get you, the atmosphere would.
Especially out here.
All right. You're on a Saturday night with Bill Jenkins and Open Mind. My guest is Bill Moore, author of the Roswell Incident. Certainly, if you have questions about that, you can. The Philadelphia Experiment. You had a hand in the ink that went on there. Other things. One of the leading researchers into the validity of the UFO. I don't think, Bill, you're interested in the flak. You're really interested in the hard data, the government cover-up and how they have covered it up. Bill knows more about that, I suppose, than anyone, and he'll be glad to share all of that information with you. And we're going to be here till midnight doing that, and you're going to get something brand new right after the 11 o'clock hour from Mr. Moore, and that ought to be quite interesting. So stay with, will you? And to answer questions you may have about the UFO, about the Philadelphia Experiment, about any of these things that he certainly has a great deal of expertise in. And rather than you and I chit-chatting along, I found out a long time ago, Bill, that the audience here is much smarter than I am. So I'm going to turn you over to them. Let me give you the numbers to talk to Bill tonight. They all end in talk, as you know. In Los Angeles, 520-TALK. Out in the San Fernando Valley, your number 990. Orange County, we want to talk to you. Your number is 750. If you're in Pasadena, Glendale, and Burbank, 244. The San Gabriel Valley, 448. Out in the South Bay, and that includes Palos Verdes, Rolling Hills, those areas, your number is 679. And if you're in Long Beach, San Pedro, Paramount, Downey, that area, your number is 639. They all end in talk, T-A-L-K. So it's your chance to kind of talk it up. And Don is on the line. Don, welcome aboard.
Hi, Bill. I just want to make a comment regarding the proliferation of sightings. It's always amazed me that even though we have a number of these sightings, that they never seem to make contact with government officials to announce their presence here. And I realize there may be a number of reasons for that, but It just seems that the fact that they just come here and do whatever they want, it's totally unlawful for them to do that.
Well,
we already have a... What's that?
Whose law are you talking about?
Well, I mean, it's against our law, obviously, and it seems to me that these people are whatever they are, they're just coming into our airspace.
I think that Milton Friedman had one of the best lines for that. Whenever you're in the forest, you don't particularly obey the law of the squirrels or even talk to them.
Yeah, I think that's true, but we already have, especially in California, we already have quite an illegal alien problem. But let me... But I did...
Are you writing some gag lines for the Johnny Carson show?
I did want to ask your guest if he's heard of the book called Secret Intent.
With some reservation, let's call it Clear Intent.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't remember. Was that the name of it? Is it Clear Intent?
Clear Intent, yes. Okay. As a matter of fact, I carry it through my publication service.
All right. Well, what I wanted to ask you is I haven't heard very much promotion on the book. On ABC, I believe, must have been a couple months ago, I heard the author interviewed, and it sounded to me like a really fascinating book, and I just wondered if you had any comments as to the authenticity.
Well, I certainly can comment as to the authenticity of some of it because he borrowed it from me, so I know it's good stuff.
Yeah, the author's name was Larry Fawcett.
Larry Fawcett and Barry Greenwood are co-authors on it. I think Larry was on the air.
Yeah, he was. He spent 3 hours with us one night.
Yeah, I know both of them quite well. Larry, I guess, a little better than Barry. The book is an excellent book for research. It's a little dry in the reading, but then, you know, when you're going to read a lot of research, you don't necessarily have a plot. But certainly well worth the trouble, and one of the most significant books on the topic to come out in the last 10 years.
Yeah,
anyway.
I would say so.
I certainly would have it in the library, and I'd have it along with the Roswell incident. You know, it's
absolutely. It's one of the top 10 books on my list of recommendations. Right after the Roswell incident and the Philadelphia Experiment, of course. a little pun there. It is available through my publication service, and we'll give out an address later if anybody wants to write for a list of available things. We have about 100 items that we offer.
Good. Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, Don. All right, appreciate your interest in getting in there with us tonight. And Perry, welcome aboard.
Thank you. How are you tonight, gentlemen?
Sitting here.
Oh, good.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have some questions about the Philadelphia Experiment.
Came to the right place.
Good. I seem to remember when I was a kid hearing some strange things about that, but not knowing anything about it until the movie came out a few years ago.
You still don't know anything about it.
Still don't know anything about it. And I was very fortunate to tune in and catch you tonight. But wanted mainly to know, Bill Moore, what your sources were for the information in your book and how I could get a hold of your book.
Once again... The book is available in hardback through my publication service, and it's quite scarce in hardback nowadays because it's been 6 years, I guess, since it came out. It is available in paperback on bookshelves around town if you can find it. I've seen it several places.
It used to be everywhere.
And it still is in print in paperback and available at places like the Bodai Tree, for example. It carries a lot of esoteric publications. They had about 8 or 10 of them the last time I was in there.
I never looked upon it as an esoteric publication.
No, but places that carry esoteric publications are likely to have it in stock today, whereas... the newsstands and the run-of-the-mill drugstore bookshelves and so on and so forth may not have it because it's just not something that is in the hot item category anymore, but it's still in print and still available.
I was also curious to know what your sources were for the material in the book, whether it was off of readings or interviews or whether you experienced it yourself.
Oh, no, I certainly didn't experience it myself. I think I was... about a month old or so when it happened.
Tiny little lad during days of World War II.
But we researched it for a considerable period of time and tried to get as close to the sources of the story as we could. And
you're dealing with some highly classified material there, by the way.
Well, I think it is, but not for the reason that a lot of people believe. The Philadelphia Experiment, for those that aren't familiar with it, we better fill them in here real quickly, has to do with an experiment conducted upon a ship, a destroyer escort ship, in 1943, in the middle of World War II, and it involved invisibility. Now, that's pretty fantastic, but there is a catch, and that is that the invisibility that they were trying to achieve was radar and not optical. And it was German radar at that, which was a pretty primitive thing in 1943. And it worked very nicely. As far as disappearing from a radar scope went, it did disappear from a radar scope. Where the problems came in was that they were utilizing a low-frequency pulsating electromagnetic field with the ship's hull as an antenna, long-wave type thing, in an effort to interfere with an incoming radar signal. Now, today it wouldn't work because we use microwave radar. It's a very sophisticated process. But in those days, it was a primitive thing and quite a different situation from a scientific point of view.
Instead of a stealth bomber that we're having to try to have
a
stealth ship.
Yeah, it was a stealth ship. That's exactly what it was. The effort was to develop a defense against the radar-guided torpedo, which it was felt the Germans were about to develop. Turned out they never did. We didn't need it. But anyway, the problem was that the men who were on board the ship, there were about 40 of them, were severely affected in the central nervous system by the nature of the electromagnetic field and experienced all sorts of bizarre effects, from just common dizziness and nausea all the way up to total blackouts, hallucinations, temporary blindness, and things of that nature, and even dream-type experiences in a couple of cases. Now, those men did not know what had happened to them. In fact, I don't think the scientific people knew what had happened either, because they hadn't planned on this. And it was from those experiences and the men talking about it later that the whole legend of the experiment grew up, involving the ship actually disappeared and turned up in Norfolk later and then back in Philadelphia again. And there was time travel and there was all sorts of things that go along with it. By the best evidence that we now have in trying to piece the thing together, there was no teleportation per se, except in the minds of some of the men who were too close to it. Now, that isn't to say that we haven't got a very exciting thing here, that there isn't a lot of classified material involved, because the implication here is one of, and it was realized after the war, and the research is still going on, it was one of mind control. If you can influence the mind of an individual by exposing him to a low-frequency field, then that certainly has a defense and offense potential in warfare. And, you get the ultimate scenario of the mad dictator in a white palace on the top of the hill pushing buttons and the people down in the courtyard being exposed to the field turning cartwheels, not knowing why.
See, we know a great deal more about that now, and you start resonating the human mind at the Earth frequency.
That is correct.
And then you start pulsing that resonance, which will run about a little over eight hertz. We see that happening in the United States. We see the famous woodpecker signals. We listened to them the other night. That is going on deliberately now from the Soviet Union, where these electromagnetic waves, which are very long and very powerful, are coursing right through your mind, and anything can happen to it. And perhaps that was one of the first times that we ever...
That's right. But keep in mind that in 1943, that sort of thing was not only unheard of, it was unthought of. And in the assessment of what had occurred during the course of the experiment, why, nobody really knew. Nobody understood.
I don't think anyone had ever pulsed anything at that low a frequency.
No, I don't believe they had. And so it was that gave rise to the high level of classification afterwards. It was that was researched afterwards with the context of what can we do with this. And it is still the subject of research. In fact, I spoke just less than 6 months ago with a scientist, a fairly eminent scientist, who confided in me that he was researching just exactly that sort of effect on rabbits, and getting some rather shocking results.
Does that help you on your answer now?
Yeah, very much. I'm at least a lot clearer on what it was and I was before. I look forward to hearing the address for your publication service so I can send it to the book.
We'll certainly get that out, but I've got a couple of other addresses I have to get out at the present time.
Well,
appreciate you checking
much.
In. It's Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins.
Well, I've got a few questions here. I hope they'll be of interest to you people in your audience.
Okay.
Mr. Moore, you mentioned in your book a Dr. Vannevar Bush, who in 1943 appointed Albert Einstein to a committee, which could have been related to the Philadelphia experiment. Now, in clear intent, it stated that Bush in 1950 was assigned to study UFO propulsion. Is this the same Vannevar Bush that you wrote about?
And it certainly is, yes.
Is he alive today, and what's he doing?
He's probably growing daisies. He died in 1974, I believe, at the ripe old age of near 90, I suppose.
Did you ever speak to him by any chance?
No, I never did. His son is still alive, but his son was never really privy to what his father was doing. Bush's papers, personal papers, are on file in a couple of locations, some of them at MIT and some of them at the Library of Congress Manuscript Division, and I've gone through those, but the vast majority of his classified papers are not available to the public at all. Bush was probably the most preeminent American scientist of the latter part of the 20th century, or the middle part of the 20th century, I guess would be more accurate, from the 30s through the 50s and probably into the early 60s. From the standpoint, I say preeminent American scientist, from the standpoint that he was a jack of all trades. He knew everybody. He was a tremendous organizer. He was able to tap virtually any scientific expert on the shoulder and say, we need you, we need your talents. He organized projects. He is, although it's not widely known, he is the father of the compartmentalization system that we now use in national security affairs, the need-to-know concept. In other words, information on a given project or a given operation is compartmentalized so that if you happen to be an electrician, all you know is what's necessary for you to do your job, and that's it. You don't know what the project's about. You don't know anything about results. You simply know that you're to go into a room and wire this to that, and when you've done it, that's the end of your job. He began that system.
A little while ago, you mentioned that the Philadelphia experiment's teletransportation from Philadelphia to Norfolk was apparently in the imagination of the people on the ship. Yet in your book, you state that it did indeed happen, and I wanted to make a point on that.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
Okay.
Where in my book do I state that it did indeed happen? I'd like you to quote that for me.
You know, I can't because I have the book in front of me, and it has, 200 pages in it, so I'd have to look through it.
You better read all of them, because it doesn't say that in there, except on the flap copy, which I didn't write. The publisher did.
Okay. I'm sorry, because what I was going to state was that if it was teletransported from Philadelphia to Norfolk, we'd obviously need a receiving station at Norfolk, and if they didn't anticipate optical, you know, or molecular dematerialization, they couldn't very well send a thing, you know, and have it received someplace. So
now, I don't know that I'd agree with that in any case. I know nothing about teleportation, do you?
No, I'm not a physicist.
Then how do you know that a receiving station would be necessary?
Well, because it would have to be transmitted in some sort of a waveform.
Now, wait a minute. You just said you knew nothing about teleportation. How do you know it would have to be transmitted in a waveform?
No, I'm just surmising.
Aha.
Okay, so let's pass on that subject. I guess neither of us are qualified.
It would not be done in that fact.
Now, let's not go so far as to say neither of us are qualified. Let's just go so far as to say that you're not qualified.
Okay.
And I don't know the answer.
You mentioned in your book of Dr. Reinhardt, the individual that...
Yes.
You did some interviewing with. Since he's dead, can you now tell us who he is?
I wish I could. Unfortunately, the family, which is still very much alive, has asked me to maintain the confidentiality on that, and I have seen fit to honor that.
Do they fear for their lives?
I don't think so. I think their main concern is that they want to live their life in peace. They don't want bothered by news media, interested researchers, publicity seekers, and just plain crackpots who would bother them in every hour of the day
and
night.
Like me, I'd go over all of his papers.
I have had access to some of his papers, as a matter of fact, but it seems that most anything that would have been pertinent he didn't have in his possession. That was all. That wasn't his property. It was government property.
Have you spoken with anybody who's in the government now that is doing any work insofar as invisibility, you know, for attempting to enhance the results of the Philadelphia experiment, perhaps on a smaller laboratory scale?
Well, now, first of all, the invisibility of the experiment was radar. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly plenty of that going on today with the electronics countermeasures research that we are experiencing, and you know, the public pronouncements on stealth are only the tip of the iceberg there.
Yeah, I meant in terms of the optical invisibility. It seems to me that when a scientist stumbles on an accident that big, the first thing they're going to say to themselves is, let's try to discover how we did this, even though we weren't trying for it.
Back up. There was no optical invisibility.
I thought that you said the ship disappeared.
No. It only disappeared off of a radar scope.
Oh. From reading a book, I certainly had the impression.
Now, there were people who were there.
How about Allende? He claimed it disappeared.
Well, Allende is another case entirely. Certainly he did claim it disappeared. But Allende turns out not to have been there personally, but only to have picked the story up from someone who was. And is today, you'd get nothing out of him. He's mentally unbalanced. But the question here is that, or the problem here is, that the invisibility achieved was off of a very primitive radar scope, German radar scope, during World War II, which was much longer wave than what is being used now.
Can I interrupt this conversation for just a second, Jim?
Sure.
Because I don't want certain things to be invisible to your ears. Or we really get jammed up. Now, can you hold on for just a second?
Sure.
We'll be back. Co-author on that of the Roswell incident, one of the foremost UFO investigators in the land. We're talking, I believe this is Jim. And we were talking, I'm going to wrap it up, about the Philadelphia experiment there, right?
That's right. I might add here that I have done quite recently, in fact, after the film came out. The film is strictly fiction. You know, it's a takeoff on the experiment.
It certainly had nothing to do with your book.
It was inspired by it. Let's leave it at that.
Okay.
And, if you've seen the film, there actually were two men on the ship who were so confused by the effects of the experiment that they jumped overboard and drowned before it was realized that they were in the water. And it's those two men that the film does a takeoff on. And instead of jumping off into the water, they jump off into time and find themselves in 1984 and try to get back. Interesting concept, but it didn't happen. But in conjunction with that, I have done an update paper, the first one since the appearance of the book in 1979, on the Philadelphia experiment, and it is available through my publication service. It's sort of a collection of material that has come to hand since the book was published, including, and we were talking about this off mic here a little bit ago, an article that I dug up in a 1930s publication involving a claim to invisibility, actual optical invisibility, complete with photographs of a device whereby a man steps into this telephone booth-like thing, and they turn on the field, and the person disappears from view. And there's a sequential series of photographs showing it. It's not written tongue-in-cheek, as far as I can tell. I've never been able to find anything else on the subject in print. It's sort of a fascinating little piece of whatever it's worth, and I tack that onto the end of the update paper just as a curiosity item. I don't know what to make of it.
Well, the things that would be in print on it right now would think have super top secret and all of that written all over it,
well,
no matter
know,
where, what country they're coming from.
As far as physics goes, it certainly is theoretically possible to create optical invisibility. If you've got enough energy to do it, you should be able to bend light in the same way you can bend radar waves. It's only a matter of a higher frequency.
All right. Let's go to Bob, who is standing by. Bob?
Yes, good evening, both of you, Bill. I'd like to start my little conversation with you guys tonight by saying in 1960 I had the occasion to set a little bumper dance in Lawson, New York, and I flew to the West Coast. And I got a job. I was doing very good for 6 months in Los Angeles, and John F. Kennedy was downtown, flying off the presidency and running for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I went downtown that day. I wanted to see the Kennedy. I wanted to see Jack Kennedy. And the people, they were throwing confetti out to the crowd, you know, the trucks ahead of the time to throw it the nominee.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was about a foot, half a foot thick in places. And then, so there's this motorcycle. So finally the president, and the ex-president, drives by with his wife and several cars go by. Then there's this motorcycle, cop's motorcycle, that caught on fire. So this Irishman was half drunk in the crowd, you know, so let it burn out, you know, happy, you know, it was raising hell, you know. Anyways,
What are you going for here, Bob?
I'm telling you about if you just have the patience, you have patience.
Well,
if you're a typical American instant everything, then I'll hang up.
No, that's okay. We were talking about UFOs, the Philadelphia experiment.
Well, we'll get to that in time.
Okay, well,
If you want a quick summary.
Yeah, I need a quick summary.
Okay, we'll bounce it around, okay?
All right.
Okay. I was in a mental hospital in the year Kennedy got assassinated, the night before, and I was sitting in my rocking chair. And they were singing my mother's song, Why When She Died, she wore blue velvet. And I was listening to the news on the television, and Kennedy was going down to Texas next day, and I said to myself, he's going to die. He's going to die. He's going to get poisoned. So then, I'm just rocking back and forth the next day. But in the afternoon, I don't know when it was, Walter Cronkite comes over to Fred, and he's been shot. It's been confirmed he's been shot. And that started that. Then he took me out to that room, and I was in another room. The same night or the next night, Frank Sinatra's son gets kidnapped in Las Vegas. Then, several years later, I'm in Bellevue Hospital, and I'm tripping out on this complex that I have, which is kind of personal business, this complex. I'm looking at the seagulls in the sky, and I think,